broadcasting worldwide from the beautiful hill country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Very pleasant. Good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, and you've got OneRadioNetwork.com. It's another beautiful week here in Central Texas, wherever you are. Hope you're having some fine weather, or not. Oh, man. It's kind of strange. Well, we have some good things for you this week. L.A. Marzulli is going to be here tomorrow. Politics, prophecy, the supernatural. Gosh, we sound like coast to coast with this morning show in L.A. in one day, in 2 days. We deal mostly with health and nutrition, I would say 60% of the time. Money, financial stuff, and then, other things. Sustainability, agriculture, preparedness. Now, we did show on food canning not long ago, spiritual matters. And I know you'll enjoy hearing our guest, Stan Deo, who I'm looking forward to talking to, in just a moment, because he's been a lot of different stuff. On Wednesday, The Real World of Money, featuring Andrew Goss, our guy who talks about the monetary system from a perspective that I think, if you've not heard him, we think he's the best in the biz when it comes to telling us how the money deal works. Analysis of the real news, who's spinning what and why, with Greg Hunter after Andy on Wednesday, and Dr. Robert Kassar, ripped and raw. He's a wild guy, and he's going to be here on Thursday. Mitch Batros next week. We love Mitch, and we'll talk about some more earth changes and stuff. Seems like earth changes is in the air. I don't know why. We've kind of doing a lot of different things here on such subjects. Stan Deo is with us, standeo.com. I woke up in the middle of the night not long ago for some reason and flipped on the radio and heard Stan Deo on Coast to Coast. And I had heard his name, but never really heard him speak. And I just sat there for about an hour listening. It was great. And then I went on his website, and then my head started to explode. And I wrapped my head in duct tape. And then I called him and said, "Mr. Deo, would you come on?" And he does a lot of shows, and I appreciate Stan Deo for being here. How are things in Colorado?
Well, they're fine, as usual. Nice, bright, sunny day out there in the mountains. Beautiful place.
Uh-huh. Boy, I tell you what, you're like a smorgasbord, Stan Deo, for guys like me who just like to ask questions about the world and how it works and that. And you've written some really nice books over the years. The Cosmic Conspiracy, that just recently came out in its final edition. There's a lot there to dig your teeth into. How long have you been at this this world of the interesting and the unusual?
Oh, well, I guess if I am truthful about it, my dad started this back in about 1957 or so, and I helped him and his brothers get into selling books on by people like J. Evetts Haley, who were talking about the corruption in our government and the Illuminati and that kind of thing. And We started back then, and I picked up the game until about 1971, when my life path took a real sudden change, and I was recruited by, who I didn't know at the time were the Illuminists, recruited by Dr. Edward Teller to go down to Australia to finish work on something I was inventing, which was a method of flying saucers. I was going to patent it. I lived at the time not far from you up in Mesquite outside Dallas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was approached there by Dr. James Maxfield on behalf of Dr. Teller, and they made all the arrangements and flew me and my family down to Australia to start a 30-year trek down there.
To create a flying saucer that would spin around and fly around?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they were ahead of me in a lot of ways, but yeah. I think they just didn't want me to file a patent on the type I was designing, even though they'd already been there and done that. They didn't want that particular thing out. So rather than, I guess, shut me up, they did the right thing and let me join the team.
Huh. Well, over the years, Stan Deo, we've heard that, the boys, the powers that were, as they are, that they've had this stuff from Roswell and they've had this technology. I don't understand is that not true? Haven't they already got a lot of the goods from the boys other than the earthly people already? Don't they know a lot of this stuff? Why did they need you to go down and get this thing going?
Well, I think basically, as I said, they were being nice to me rather than disappearing me. They decided to use my talents down there on their team to catch me up. I mean, my first briefing in Dallas there, I was told things that made my head spin about how they'd had anti-gravity since early 60s, and they had been building stuff at a base under the South Pole, and you had to get to by submarine, and I just kind of sat there with my jaw on the table because this was what, everybody that's been investigating UFOs would like to sit into a conference like that with these mighties, and when I say a conference, it was a conflict between two of us there in his office, but they showed me pictures of Dr. Maxfield with Dr. Teller, popping a cork in the champagne as they went under the pole and, in the submarine.
Well, when you say these mighties, who were these guys?
Well, I guess, a lot of people call them the Illuminati as a genre, but there are bankers, there are scientists, industrialists, maybe a few politicians, but mainly people that are behind the scenes running our world, primarily controlled by the economic interests out of the city of London and on the western side of the world economy. You could lump all of these guys into the controlling elements of the Western Christian, Judeo-Christian nations in opposition to China, Asia, and Russia.
So China, Russia, and Asia are not in this group of people that we'll call the powers that were or whoever they are?
Well, the Russian side have been. Andrei Sakharov, the Nobel Prize winner, was Dr. Teller's equal in charge of the research project for the Russian side, but he was confined under house arrest for many years in Russia because of what he had, and he couldn't even go accept his Nobel Prize. But as time has passed, the Russian-American agreements within the back room have really come under serious threat, and Russia is under pressure internally from Islamic factions within the army and in the Georgian province and south of there. So they have had to side with the Islamic request for nuclear arms and support in the Middle East, which now semi-aligns Russia with China. But above all the things, all the nations on the planet at the moment, China is the one to watch. China's the driving force, and Russia's having to dance to their tune to a degree. But China's whole game plan is one that the Genghis Khan initiated, and that was to let your enemies fight each other. So they're letting the Russians, the Americans, the Jews, the Christians, the Muslims beat the heck out of each other until they're absolutely exhausted, and then their plan is to move in and pick up the pieces with a minimum loss of life and resources.
Do you think that there, as your research showed, Stan Dale, that there is a layer above the geopolitical kind of ramblings that go on in the money interests that actually are sit down with China and Russia and, a la Nixon going to China and Kissinger? In other words, the money boys above these people where they don't fight with each other?
Well, to a small degree, yes. They all want to be on top of the heap when the global government is established.
Right.
Kissinger has often stated that Obama is his choice for the leader of the New World Order. Whether that comes to pass, whether they're able to make him the leader, or whether someone else will take the throne, we don't know. And I say throne because it will be a dictatorship, called a kingdom of some sort.
Yeah.
But, Satan in the end, in my opinion, I'm a Christian fellow, and Satan in the end is going to be running and controlling the guy who is the New World leader. He'll supply him with technology, better flying saucers than we can make, and hence anti-gravity and new technologies for healing and medicine communications. And in the first 3 years or so of the reign of the New World Order, people will think that they've died and gone to heaven because things will be peaceful and wunderbar at the hands of this New World leader under the control of Satan. But if you have studied the game plan over the years, you'll know that the Illuminist plan was outlined, something called the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, and it incorrectly, or purposely, I guess, tried to aim the world global plan at Jewish Zionists. And although there may have been some Jewish people involved in some Masonic lodge somewhere where this was found, this was not the truth. Whoever designed this is putting the United States, Israel, and the European Union at severe risk, and is harming them to bring about this world order plan. So they've been playing this game plan they laid out in 1945 in this the protocols. This has been laid out and has been executed right up until now, until we're at the point where people are looking at the politicians and saying, fire the lot of them. They're no good. We need someone with, you know, clout and with order and not subject to payola and all that kind of stuff. So this is the last stage of the plan for establishing a dictatorial world government, and it's upon us almost as we speak.
12 minutes after 9 o'clock with Stan Deo, standeo.com. If you care to join us, we have a phone number here. It's 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. So, Stan, you said that you're a Christian, so give me your concept of this entity called Satan, or what people would call maybe evil or the dark side, and how this plays into New World Order, Illuminati kind of world government that you say is underway right now as we speak.
So if I understand that correctly, Patrick, you want me to give you a description of what I think Satan is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think he is, as the Bible says, that he was once the number one guy guarding over the throne of our creator, the Elohim, God. Mm-hmm. And that he decided that he was going to ascend to the throne rather than guard it, and figured himself smarter and better than our creator, and as a result was cast down, cast away from that position, and in these days is being cast down to earth very shortly, if he's not here already, for his final kind of battle with God and with our Messiah, Yeshua ben Elohim, Jesus. And that will occur probably in the next decade, if I understand current events related to prophecy properly. Satan is going to pose as an alien god, little g, god. This is in the 8 verses of Daniel that I have just recently retranslated and put into the final edition of the Cosmic Conspiracy. It took me 3 months, kind of part-time, Patrick, to research and properly translate these 8 very difficult verses, which translators have had trouble with for years. But with the help of computing and some rabbis and things, I was able to retranslate it and unseal the kind of sealed part of it, which told about Satan posing as a god and giving technology, advanced technology and weapons, to the world dictator that he will support in return for that world dictator giving him certain lands and people to own or consume or whatever he wants to do. As you may be aware, and I've shown on page 200 of the Cosmic Conspiracy, the Club of Rome has made, since 1978, there's been a public map showing what they plan to do in dividing the world up into 10 socio-economic religious nations. And so all the 196 nations are going to be grouped into 10 regions. And those 10 regions are the 10 toes in the dream of Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel, that Daniel interpreted for the king. They're the mixed toes of iron and clay, and in there it says, and they will not mix with the seed of man. And they're talking about fallen ones from the upper levels of heaven following Satan and his lead, and they will actually take the land and people that they are given by the Antichrist of this age, and he and Satan and his minions will probably crossbreed with people they have in those nations, if they haven't already. And in the translation I did, it says that Satan and his minions will look at the people of Earth as though they are weak, fragile defenders of the planet, and they will look upon them as one would look upon fodder, you know, like food.
Satan, are you saying that Satan is from another reality that will incarnate Stan Deo into a physical body. Is that close to what you're saying is going to happen?
If I understand Scripture properly, the human Antichrist of this age, whether he knows it or not, during the middle of his reign, will receive a apparently fatal head wound, which he will die from, apparently, and then revive. Now, when he revives, it says he will be indwelt by the spirit of Satan. Now, I assume that wherever Satan is, that if he's not physically there, he will be physically present in the earth through the Antichrist body, having possessed it totally. I see Satan as a being somewhere, and with mighty knowledge and power, completely familiar with the Bible, and knowing what we are expecting, even as believers, Christian believers and Jewish believers this time, knowing what we're expecting and planning to deliver a great deception to fool us all into thinking he is the true Messiah, having arrived to bring peace to the earth and this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, the argument's going to be great. The technology that he gives to the Antichrist will apparently, you know, it'll allow him to use peace to come in and take control of the world, peace treaties, peace agreements. And then people lay down their weapons in a lot of places, and everything will be, you know, ubiquitous, and people will be just tickled to death that many of the crises, perhaps some of the global changes and earthquakes and all that kind of stuff, will appear to be healed or stopped or fixed by the Antichrist in conjunction with these aliens. They will be billed as friendly aliens who created us, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he will, with their help, appear to bring peace and stability to the planet, peace and security. And when you hear people doing that, and they're doing it in the news now, saying, we want peace and security, you know, security comes economically as well. So they want a global economic system and a global police force with, you know, the clout to make everybody behave. So peace and security come at a price.
Standale, do you think it's possible that even folks who are not Christian, and if they look at this idea of Satan as being ideas and energy that are certainly out there as we can all see, but not necessarily a specific soul, that these people will come together, and even if they don't agree on the exact modality of how this is working, how this good and evil thing is still going to play out? Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
In other words, can it be that the millions and millions of folks who are not necessarily on your page with the Christian idea of Satan being a specific soul, you know, that is going to incarnate, but that the idea of this evil, which has been talked about since the beginning of time, and the good and evil that's been on this planet, those folks should still be able to be kind of like on your side as well, the Christians, even though they don't, because it can also be the same thing, even though it's not this necessarily soul who's incarnated. In other words, the evil,
right,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I do.
I don't know if I'm being very clear.
Well, if these people who are not yet believers, who've not yet signed their allegiance to Jesus Christ, if they have not done that and they're looking at current events and thinking, look, it's just, an abstract concept. When the quote-unquote alien god, superpower visitor is officially announced with his minions, you know, when V becomes a reality, you know, like the series on TV,
mm-hmm.
They are going to see a world leader backed by the aliens and the leader of the aliens. Now, those are going to be real bodies. Now, what they have to be able to do is to know that he is an imposter pretending to be the real Messiah who will come shortly thereafter. And I put in my book, the last paragraph of the book is from Matthew 24, verses 22 to 27. And basically, that is the warning to everyone, whether they're believers now or potential believers, but not quite yet there until the tribulation starts, until they recognize the Satan for what he is. But it says, here's how you tell the difference between the real Creator's Son and between Satan. It says, if any man shall say to you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christ, false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, you know, that's technology, insomuch that if it were possible, they should deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before. Wherefore, if they shall say to you, behold, he is in the desert, don't go there. Behold, he is in secret chambers, don't believe it. For as the lightning comes out of the east and shines even unto the west, so also shall be the coming of the Son of Man. Well, in other words, it's going to be a big deal, and he won't be hiding in some place where you have to go see him in his flying saucer in orbit or underground or whatever. The real Messiah will be known to all things living on this planet at once.
And what does that mean to you when you say Messiah, Standale? What does that look like?
Well, a Messiah is a real being. The guy that hung on the cross, died, and was born again. But
Jesus, you believe, is in, will come back into a body?
Oh, he's already in a body, yeah. And he'll just simply come from the upper levels of the universe, and there are parallel or concentric universes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And where he dwells at least is three levels above us, maybe more. And he will gate, pour into this universe where we are to resolve a conflict that started when Satan rebelled in the heavens against the Creator. This whole human history from the Garden of Eden until now, at least the modern history from that point forward, has been about the crime of Satan rebelling and trying to overthrow the established order of God, and being told that, all right, by God, that, okay, Satan, we're going to set up a virtual courtroom called Earth, and we're going to set free will beings, and we're going to let you go down there and turn them to your way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to then, play fair, and we're going to see if running the world the way you want to have the power concentrated in you rather than down through everything, through everybody, and not letting me do it and dwell them, you're going to take control of everything, and we're going to see how that works. And if it fails, then you have judged yourself, by your actions in this virtual reality. Well, Satan cheated. He got the Garden of Eden thing, then he had his beings crossbreed with our women in Genesis 6 and form hybrid beings that were half heavenly and half human, and which gave rise to many of the Greek gods and goddesses and those kind of tales. And all this polluted the genetic structure of mankind so that he could pollute the results of the virtual courtroom test. The flood was sent by God and wiped out all the bad genes that would appear, but some of them did survive. Some giants reappeared on the other side of the flood, like Og and Goliath and his tribe. So Satan has repeatedly tried to cheat on the courtroom that was to fairly judge him, rather than God saying out of hand, I'm going to take away your free will and incarcerate you, which I gave to you and said, you have everlasting life, etc. I'm going to take that away. He said, look, I'm not going to do that. He said to Satan, you're going to judge yourself just by your actions and the results of it. And so that's what we're seeing, is a Messiah returning to bring order to the planet, to reclaim the title deed to it now then, and to rebuild it, make it peaceful again, before the next stage in the development of mankind that is signed on with God. And there's a whole universe, or universes out there that we can explore and develop and create in. So that's our doorway.
Interesting. 24 minutes after the hour, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Here's an email from Jan in sunny Ireland. Oh, it's sunny there. Could you please ask your guest about his opinion on this? The origins of humanity on planet Earth. Did we evolve from primates? Did we come from another planet? Were we created by God? What is his theory or belief?
Okay, good question. The first line of Genesis, Bereshit in Hebrew, the first line of that says, includes in it tohu bohu, ha'eretz tohu bohu. That means the earth had become waste and void, which meant it had a prior state of being developed and working. Now, that was before the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden comes after that, and mankind's put there to populate it. And it says that, well, there's two structures, two discussions of mankind general and mankind specific with Adam and Eve. But you know in the Adam and Eve tale that it said that God took a rib out of Adam to get the DNA and created an extract of him as the female rather than the male, but of the male, and that was Eve. So I don't think that we evolved out of apes and trees. Certainly there are apes, and they have similar genetic structure, but Adam was created although it was similar, you know, in a hominid form, Adam had a soul, a link, this invisible link that was hooked up to God, you know, this side of him. And all of Adam's descendants should have had that. But because of the crossbreeding until the time of Noah's flood, it polluted most of the earth with the hybrid DNA. So don't think we dropped out of the trees and evolved. But certainly there's evidence of adaptive mutation in insects, animals, and even some humans in their skin tone and their eyelid coverings in various snow countries. So
some people believe there was some type of genetic manipulation from other than earthly beings. Do you think that's true? Into the human body?
I consider the ones that we call the fallen angels, you know, the ones that populated Atlantis and that kind of stuff, that these, well, I guess we'd call them aliens today because they're not from around here, but they're from a parallel universe spoken of in the Bible and many other ancient texts as being up there, not necessarily so much out of some star system or whatever, but from a parallel invisible universe or universes. There are stories that tell when these beings have appeared in the Middle East. They come out of the sky and there's heat, fire around them as they approach, and then they have to cool off a bit, then they can talk to us. Jesus even said to the disciples just before he ascended into the heavens and disappeared on Mount Hermon, he said, look, don't touch me, for I'm not yet ascended. And, you know, he charged up, and in some of the old writings there were actually little sparks of lightning under his feet as he rose up in the air to disappear. So,
when do you think the Garden of Eden was on Earth?
Well, as close as the ancient records can date it, it was 6,000 years ago, and I was able to track down the location of it using the ancient Hebrew in the book of Genesis. And I put that in a book called Vindicator Scrolls, which is now out of print, unfortunately. But in there I show that the Garden of Eden was and still is in the Danakil Plains of Ethiopia. The great river that went into the garden is the river that flowed out of the great East African Rift in Ethiopia and down into the Danakil Plains there at Djibouti. You can even see in the sea floor there where that water from that high river came down and dug a hole and split into four rivers before the continents were split apart. Now, the reason you can't see the Garden of Eden there in the Danakil Plains, all you can see is hot magma, is, as the ancient writing said, God put a sparkling, spinning firestorm there to guard the Garden of Eden. It was a volcanic-type eruption. And there are 13 volcanoes, at least, around that area that have covered it with magma, and many of them are still active. So we won't be seeing the Garden of Eden anytime soon because it's covered over with hot stone. And if you remember, God speaks to the king of Tyre, but really he's speaking to Satan, metaphorically, and he says, you're going to be cast down and die on the hot stones of Eden. And that tells you, again, it's not in the Middle East. It's right there in the Danakil Plains. And I find that unusual, too, because the Ethiopians claim that they have the Ark of the Covenant, which they may or may not have. I doubt it. But still, they're a very faithful group, and Jewish and Christian both. So.
So when do you think that souls lived in Atlantis and Lemuria?
I think that they were there back before the Garden of Eden, maybe 12 to 20,000 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
I did find evidence of the pre-Noahic, before Noah-type civilization in Saudi Arabia, all through there and in the empty quarter called the Rub al-Khali, and also in the Persian Gulf, I found evidence of a sunken salt diapir, which may have been what was spoken of in the Critias and Timaeus debates by Plato, telling where Atlantis was and the capital of it. They talk in there, in the Critias and Timaeus debate, about the fallen ones coming down from the heavens, 12 of them, 12 sons of God, and they split apart different parts of the earth, some to South America, or what became South America, and to Saudi Arabia, which was the Atlantean-type tale. And they had the ones around Atlantis there in Saudi Arabia had a fairly large reach all the way to Egypt and all the way up to probably around Turkey somewhere, as I recall. And there were descriptions of landforms and forests, and I found evidence of huge petrified trees that were long gone in the Rub al-Khali, southern and mid portions of Saudi Arabia. So Atlantis was there. I'm pretty sure of it.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay, stay right there. Stan Dale, and we're going to talk about a lot of different things, earth changes, pole shifts, soul reincarnation. Also, I'm going to ask Stan Dale after the break about his near-death experience that he had in the late 60s. If you care to join us, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@1radionetwork.com. Good morning. We're live here every morning, 9 to 11 a.m. Central. Daniel Vitalis, let's play a game. On a desert island, you can only pick one food. Just one. Just only one.
If I had to live off of one food, I think it would be, if I had any choice, it would probably be colostrum. It's the most complete food that I know of. And the thing about colostrum is it's the first food for any mammal. So it's kind of a no-brainer that colostrum contains all essential fats, it contains all essential amino acids, it contains all essential glyconutrients, which are carbohydrates. It basically contains every substance that we need to maintain our bodies. The first milking you get from a cow after the cow calves is called colostrum. Every milking thereafter is called transitional milk, and what it is it's part colostrum and part milk. So that's something that can happen in the industry because people will sell you the transitional milk and call it colostrum. We're very careful not to do that. We only use the first milking of the animals.
Pure colostrum from SirThrival. They take the moisture out. That's it. To order, click on the picture of colostrum, front page, oneradionetwork.com.
We are usgoldcoins.com, and we provide to investors physical gold and silver coins that you would actually take possession of. We find many investors feel there's tremendous comfort in the physical acquisition and ownership of actual American money in the form of gold and silver coins. Certainly in times where the economy is troubling, this is a great venue for people to explore. And to help educate new investors to the market, usgoldcoins.com is offering a free CD called Protecting Your Wealth. Call us today at 1-800-878-2646. We'll be happy to send this CD along that you can listen to at your leisure. Call us anytime for questions on anything having to do with the broad economy or gold and silver coins. USGoldCoins.com, 1-800-878-2646.
The gold and silver spot prices came out of the gate last night when the market opened in China or wherever they do in the Sunday night our time. And now silver is up considerably, $33.88. These are 30-year highs. And gold at $14.13, the dollar is down considerably. Crude oil is very close to $100 a barrel.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Talk to Patrick now, 888-663-6386, or email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
We're going to talk to L.A. Marzulli tomorrow. Politics, prophecy, the supernatural. Andrew Goss, Wednesday morning. Then after Andrew, very interesting man, Greg Hunter, who has a website called uswatchdog.com. Pretty wild stuff about who's doing the spinning, why they're doing the spinning, and how they're doing that. And then Dr. Robert Kassar on Thursday between 9 and 11, who is a raw foodie, but he's like ripped like dough. Holy cow. This guy's really strong, and we'll figure out and find out how he does that. And that'll be on Thursday. Patrick Timpone, having fun talking with Stan Deo, D-E-Y-O, standeo.com. Mr. Deo, I have been blessed to have one of those near-death experiences myself a few years after you did. And things change after that.
They do, don't they?
After you see that you're not the body and say, whoa, the game has changed, isn't it? Tell me, can you want to tell us about yours, or is it too private?
No, that's fine. This was back in 1969, as I recall,
right.
In Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I had contracted some kind of a virus or bacteria. We're not sure what it was at the time, but it made my whole body, every joint, it just so painful I could hardly breathe from the pain.
Hmm.
And I I was single at the time in an apartment there in North Dallas, I think it was. And I went to the nearest hospital and said, look, guys, you know, I got a problem here. And so they, Acromycin 4 was an antibiotic at the time, experimental, so they gave me, you know, a shot of that and some pills and tablets to take after that and sent me home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember going home to my apartment, laying in the bed, and trying to find a position. It was nighttime. But trying to find a position to lay in that I didn't hurt so bad. I can't explain to you how much I hurt.
Wow.
I started moving my arms and my legs to the least hurt position. And in essence, when I had finished doing it, it was almost like you were laying out on a cross, your arms straight out to your sides and my feet kind of down to the bottom cross. Now, as I was laying there and thinking about, I've just got to will this pain away, I've got to get away from it, it was like I was suddenly watching a drop of water fall from a faucet toward my navel, and I was out of my body looking at it, and as it would have hit my body, I found myself bouncing straight out of my body, straight up through the roof and out into this silky, smooth darkness at an incredible rate of speed, and don't ask me how I knew, I just...
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
Okay.
And so I was zipping out there, and off to my right, like a bunch of television screens started opening. It might have been 50, 60, 100 of them. They're just a bunch. And my mind was no longer constrained to what I could think of in the body. I could watch all those screens at once.
Yes.
And it was scenes from my life in the past and my interactions with people where something I had said or done had hurt them. And I was able to see beyond that into how it hurt them after, you know, I was away from them, what I'd done. And rather than being like, oh, I got to hide my face. Did I really say that? I was more like a judge sitting there calmly looking and saying, yes, okay, I was guilty of that. I was guilty of that. Yep, okay. Well, I understand at this time that even though I'd been baptized and gone to, you know, church school and all that kind of stuff, you know, for Bible studies and things, I really was not switched on to being a born-again believer and being active. You know, I was kind of dormant, if the case, if I could say it that way. And I'd moved away into the more secular beliefs and stuff. So to see this and experience this was really quite unique. And I was moving out toward a distant light, bright light, way out there, as I was watching all these screens of my life events and interactions, and some future ones that would happen, but not many of those. And as I was moving through this silky darkness, I would feel something break loose from my body and flow behind me like something that got caught in a slipstream on a boat and just, you know, got washed away. And I looked back toward along my body, in where I was spiritually, and it was like I was made of screen wire, and I had mud inside that screen wire, and big clods would wash away. And when they did, I would lose a negative emotion, like greed or hate or that kind of stuff. I would feel it leave me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling so clean inside my spirit. It's a hard thing to explain, but I felt clean and calm, and I started to curl up like an embryo to wait to arrive out there at the light to a greater peace than we had here. And I did, the thing I noticed even as I was out there on the way, a peace that is hard again to explain, but all of the aches, pains, and senses of the body that were painful weren't there, and of the spirit, they weren't there. And it's a peace that just transcends all things we could even talk about here on the earth. And as I was curling up to just wait for my arrival out there, something caught me on the right side of my head, like in my right ear, like a snag, and it spun me around and started to pull me back toward my body, down way down below. And I thought, whoa, and I spread my hands out to stop this. I was like, wait, I'm not going back there. This is too good. And I couldn't stop the descent, so I thought, right, I'll fall back into my body and cut whatever that cord is that's pulled me back into the body so I can get back out here. So as I hit the body, I hit it on my right side with my right arm, right leg in the body, and my left arm, left leg hanging on a ledge I could actually feel out there. And I realized that there was a phone by the bed ringing, and that was in my right ear, and that was the tug. So I thought, well, I better knock it off so that it doesn't bother me and knock it off the cradle. And I thought, I have to move my hand, and it was like moving a piece of 10-pound ham, you know, with your fingers on the end of the thing. It was very difficult to move this dead arm over and knock the phone off, but I did. And then I could hear, as the receiver fell down close to my ear, I could hear my mom saying, calling my name, saying, "Are you all right?" you know, are you all right? And I thought, well, I'll just answer and she'll hang up. And I had to get my vocal cords working. My mouth was dried open, and finally I got it to open and work. And I said, no, Mom, I'm fine. I was just resting. I saw your spirit walk before me like your grandfather did when he died. And I said, no, I'm fine. I'll be okay. You're just going back to doing what you're doing, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. And as I said that, I realized my left arm and my left leg had slipped off that ledge, and I was completely back in my body. I was no longer out there. And, you know, I learned a lot of things, even in physics, when I was out there. But as I came back into my body, it seemed as though the shoe was too tight, the body was. And a lot of the things I was aware of easily out there, that fell out of my ears. You know, I couldn't remember them anymore. But it's like your consciousness has been squeezed back into a tiny little bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that compare with yours?
Well, different, but a lot of the things are very close. Very close. What though did you, when you discovered that you were not the body, have you then thought about the idea that you may have lived before and will live again after this body, reincarnation?
Well, didn't know about living before. Never.
Never experienced a before this lifetime. You don't have any knowledge of that.
No, but certainly I realized that we do live outside the body, and that was enough to you know, when I came out of that out-of-body thing, I woke up, you know, or I got off the bed. And I felt really refreshed and healed almost, you know.
Right.
I couldn't tell you there was no pain, so I went out to an all-night diner to order breakfast. And I sat down on the stool there, and the waitress came over, and you know, I gave her my order. And while she was away, I was doodling on a napkin there, and she comes back and says, "Oh, that's pretty. What is that?" And I looked at it, and it was a picture of the Earth, a scene from about where you are if you're on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a title floating across it, and it said, "Diagnosis, Creation, Conquest." And she says, "What is that?" And I says, "It's a book I'm going to write."
Creation Wow.
Okay, well, it became the Cosmic Conspiracy.
But, I see.
And that took me, from that time, it took me 8 years.
Right.
Until I actually was 12,000 miles away and had written the book. All, again, by very, what you could call coincidental meetings and teaming up with TV stations and stuff like that. Completely unexpected, but it did happen.
Yeah. Stan, your host here has had glimpses of when I actually have lived on Lemuria in a past life. And I don't know about how long ago. Some people, like yourself, said it's 12 to 20,000. So I don't understand how that be true, and I believe it is. It certainly is my experience, and also a glimpse of Atlantis, a life there. How does that work into, Stan Dale, the idea of, you know, Adam and Eve, 6,000 years, if I've been around longer than that?
Well, Patrick, I don't know if you have been around longer than that.
But I do. I've had experiences where I was in Lemuria. That's real.
And when you had these experiences, what did you see?
I saw lands and feelings and experiences with people that I guess if I had to try to describe them, they would be similar, and I don't know much about the Bible, Stan, but similar to an experience of the Garden of Eden, the idea. It was just amazing. There was no tension between anybody. Everything that we needed was there. We didn't have to cook our food. We didn't do anything except... we hung out and was like, we were like a God-realized state. It was just pure peace.
Well, now, I have worked in some what they call deliverance ministries where they talk to spirit beings that talk through people as channels. And that's not a good thing, in my opinion, when they do. But anyway, I have talked to these beings when we were trying to get them out of control, these people, and found that they... did have recollections of the things you're talking about themselves. And so it has caused me to wonder if people who have, in dream states or waking states, seen themselves in a former life or portions of it, if they are not being influenced by one of these beings projecting their memories onto them. Because I do believe there were people back then who are now disembodied on this planet.
Disembodied, you mean on another planet now?
No, here. But here, probably incarcerated in the inside of the planet, in the void that's between the surface and the core of the planet. But that's another story. I mean,
That certainly is. Yeah.
But this is my concern, and certainly no one died and left me in charge of interpreting the Bible, you know, with 100% accuracy. But as far as I can determine, I am, and I've used things like the Ouija board in the past, of which I now have disclaimed and whatever, you are, cast it out of my life. But I have talked to beings that were disembodied, and I do know that they can plant memories and stuff very quickly into a live human that are not theirs. I'm sure you're aware of the little girl over in India that had such a complete recollection of her former life that she was able to take her parents and friends to another town, to a home where she was a wife, an adult woman, and had children.
Sure. It happens all the time.
Well, now why? You have to ask yourself, is it really her memory, or is it a memory inflicted upon her by a being possessing her or controlling her against her will, but peacefully? So
It's really interesting, Stan. I know a lady that actually lives in this town, and she had two daughters. One of her daughter died in an automobile accident, and this was about 20 years ago. And then the other daughter became pregnant about 4 years later. And both the daughter and the mom knew that her sister who was killed is coming back again. And they didn't even say anything until the baby was born. But they both knew it intuitively. And the daughter to this day, who I know as well, Stan, she remembers this past life, to where she was in an automobile accident when her mom, who is now her grandma, and her mom, who is now, who used to be her sister, and they all remember it, and it's all very clear. So it's isn't that interesting?
Well, let me ask you this. You know this family well. Would you say that they are Christian or Jewish or any faith at all?
Yes, actually, they belong to the spiritual path Ekankar, the same one that I belong to, Ekankar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, my studies, and that's just what I've learned from the Bible and various things, do show me that if a person has not given permission to the what's called the Ruach HaKodesh in Hebrew, which is the Holy Spirit in English, if you've not allowed this spirit to indwell you and fend off any outside spirits, and they are real but just invisible to us, if you have not done this, you do run the risk of being misled into a philosophy that takes you away from the whole virtual courtroom reality concept that the Bible puts upon us. I'm concerned when people tell me this. You know, I'm not going to be pedantic, but it worries me that something has gotten into their minds and has not let go.
Do you think we are our minds?
Say again?
Do you think that we as soul are our minds?
A mind, M-I-N-D?
Yes. Do you think that Patrick, as a soul, or Stan, as a spirit, that one above the body that you experience, is...
You're talking like higher self, lower self type thing?
No, just you are soul, right? You are a spiritual being.
Yeah.
I am a spiritual being. I am not the body. Do you think that you, as soul, Stan Dale, is the mind?
Well, I think so, yeah.
Do you? Okay. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Can you please ask Stan, here's an email, Stan, from Simon Mort. He wants to know about, that we wanted to ask you about, is pole shift. And we'll get more back into this, too, because I love talking about the spiritual aspects, but people have other questions. Do you mind?
All right. No, yeah.
I mean, you know, we can solve all the world's problems in 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. Challenges.
What can you explain what your Standale, what's your idea or your understanding of pole shift? I keep hearing this thing, and I've had people on the air, but I've never really understood what's going on. Can you explain to us what's going on?
I'll do the best I can, Patrick. On our website at standeo.com, that's standeo.com. You'll find a link to Patrick's show at the very top. It says listen live, and you can listen to show live there, but obviously you're listening already. And to the right of that, there's a thing that says show images. And if you click on that, it's going to be what I'm going to be talking about now, and it'll be up there for replays of the show as well. Now, on this set of images I've got up there...
Can you speak up a little bit, Stan?
Oh, sorry. Okay. All right. Let's see. On this set of images I've got up on the screen, I'm talking about the pole shift, the expansion of the planet, the new gravitational theory I've got, and all that kind of stuff. But before I get into that, let me say that the pole shift they're talking about has two aspects. One is that the magnetic pole will totally invert, and the south will become north and that kind of thing. And the other is that the actual spin axis of the planet will shift and possibly go upside down.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know that it will go that far, but that's pole shift. There's geophysical and geomagnetic. Pole.
Geophysical and geomagnetic. Now, we could see, Stan, if the magnetic pole shift, it's not a big deal, really. The compass just points the other way, right? And birds maybe will have a problem and they have to change airports like they're already doing around the country, aren't they?
Well, they are, but
they're
do
moving
periodically anyway.
They do, yeah, because it hasn't always been changing, Stan, gradually?
It has.
Uh-huh.
It rotates a bit. The North Pole moves about 40 kilometers a year, but it's speeded up in the last 10 years.
And why do you think that is? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I do. The North Pole is moving its location about 10 times as fast as the South Pole is. So it's telling you that we're the core of the planet that generates the magnetic field is wobbling at the top. It's like a top that's unstable and about to fall over.
Hmm.
And this is, I think, a periodic thing that happens inside planets, stars, and galaxies, which causes the core to flip-flop to do what we call a conserved momentum of the compression. But that's technical jargon. Basically what it means is it's going to just slow down and flip over. Now, the magnetic field of the Earth is a plus, a benefit, because not all planets or asteroids have magnetic fields,
mm-hmm.
per se. But
mm-hmm.
this magnetic field shields us from a lot of the radiation coming from the sun and other star systems that would kill life on the planet. So if that field weakens, as it does over the South Atlantic Anomaly area in the South Atlantic Sea, if it weakens, it will allow radiation that is fatal to life to penetrate that. Now, in the last 5 years, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, this whole spread out up over toward the equator and over toward South America,
mm-hmm.
and there were some northern islands off the near Central America up there that were ringing us saying, the people saying that the sun is so hot that it's like pins sticking into our skin, and our children are being sent home from school with rashes and welts and nausea, and we can't stand to be outside. What is wrong? And this is a number of reports coming from people living there that have heard our radio shows and
mm-hmm.
called in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was because the magnetic field weakened just a little over them, and they were getting bombarded with radiation from the sun and other star systems that was burning them. And I have experienced it briefly myself in Perth when the ozone hole opened up, and it was so bright with ultraviolet you couldn't even look at white sheets on the hanging out on the wash line because it would blind you. And driving down the freeway, your eyes wanted to water and cry from the light of the sun.
Hmm.
Now, it passed, but I know that that's the value of the magnetic field. So when it's going to weaken and flip-flop or weaken and change, it is serious concern.
Do you have any idea of the time frame, what this looks like?
Well, I understand, Patrick. My studies of the Hebrew make me a kind of a messianic believer.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believe the prophecies that Daniel the prophet wrote about and that are in the Revelation to John in you know, the book of mm-hmm. Revelation. If we are in that time period of the last days, we're somewhere within 10 years of the sun becoming very bright all of a sudden and burning a third of the Earth's trees and grass on one side of the sun as it's facing it when it hits. And it'll leave the planet so hot that for weeks people will want to be in caves or underground or something like that. Now, the Hopi Indian, the prophecy keepers there have had Holly and I in their home down there and told us that they are preparing for a 2 to 3 week period when the sun will be so hot they will have to hide underground in their mud homes called kivas, and they're like a an igloo out of mud, but underground.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been putting away dried corn and beans in pots and water and getting ready to endure that 2 to 3 week period.
Yeah, and there's certainly others around the world that talk about this idea of having to be underground for a period of time. Why do you and others, Stan Dale, give so much credibility to the Hopis?
Well, look, the credibility I give to them is where their prophecies coincide with the biblical prophecies. All right? There are some things that the Hopis speak of that are kind of like worshiping spirits or you know, like the dolls they have, the Kachinas. They're spirit type religion. I don't know what you call that, but that kind of stuff I don't support. And within the Hopi Nation, there is a battle between the traditionalists using that philosophy versus the kind of Christian new Hopi plan. That
mm-hmm.
There is friction. But they do agree that they were visited as recently as 1,000 years ago by Masa, who came down in his craft and spoke to them and told them of these things, and that the time would come soon, where they would see water flow between the mesas where they live, and they'd have to go by canoe, and that there would be great civil war in the United States between various factions that would destroy America, and that the remnant of America after that would come to them and the Navajo, and they would all move up into the Four Corners region of the United States, into Colorado and Utah and those areas.
Really?
Yeah, and that's where the new land would be given to them, and it would be a very fertile land and fertile with game and with agriculture and a peaceful place for them, and that's what their promise is. Now, understand that for water to run between the mesas of the Hopi Nation, that water either has to rise up 5,280 feet or that area has to subside suddenly, and it's in the southern portions of Nevada, Arizona, California, where there are a lot of earthquakes at the moment, and it could fall off of that edge of the tectonic plate and drop down. And if it did that, then they would drop them down closer to sea level, and then the water could encroach without being a mile deep.
Mm-hmm. So there's ways that folks could experience Stan Dale water other than the earth warming and the ice caps melting and such.
Several ways.
Yeah, I guess there'd be all kinds of ways. Like, look what's happening in Australia.
Yes.
Why not?
With the deluge, but that's temporary. It does run off into the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
The calculations on the melting of the ice on the earth and letting that go into the sea, the polar ice melted, would only raise the sea level a maximum of 200 feet. However,
that's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
About 85% of the homes.
Yeah, I mean, New Orleans doesn't even exist at 10 feet above sea level or something.
That's it. You know that. But that's not the only other source of water. When I was studying the old story of the flood,
mm-hmm.
What is not widely known in the English-speaking world is that the waters of the flood were not all due to rain. That stopped after 40 days. It continued for another 100 days or so after that, with the water swelling up from fountains of the deep, and they were hot water. And we have those today in the North Pacific, and they're called smokers, and they're underground vents that are putting out water around 400 degrees Fahrenheit that is loaded with salts from down underneath the earth. You know,
mm-hmm.
In fact, it has a density of about 3.3 times that of water.
Mm.
In studying that, I found out where these things came from that flooded the earth and then disappeared. There is a shell of water underneath the surface of the earth, and it's only down about 10 to 15 miles in various places across the planet. It's shallower under the ocean,
mm-hmm.
and deeper under the mountains or the higher places. But it's in what we call the MOHO discontinuity, earthquake discontinuity, the seismic zone. We can measure the thickness of it. And so it's known that it has a bunch of hot water in it, and that water has a density of 3.2 to 3.3, just like it's coming out in the smokers. So when it says in the Old Testament records that, okay, the fountains of the deep were broken open and they, you know, flooded the earth with this hot water, then this water was being pushed up. But what made it push up? It was because the earth was expanding inside and stretching. And it was like a hypodermic syringe pushing on this water layer and squirting it out into the upper seas. Now, I don't think that we'll get it quite as drastically as that now, I think we'll have more problem with the fire from the sun and various fires that will erupt on the planet because of them.
Mm-hmm.
But if water is coming.
If you were on a game show, Stan, and you had to, you had to either guess Earth warming or cooling, what would you tell? What would you say?
I'd say that if you sum the changes over this next decade, it will be hot.
Do you think it's going to be warming?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. The sun is the major driver of our climate weather. Man's impact on it is minuscule. You know, this global warming stuff. Forget that. It's what the sun does that counts. And the sun is being very erratic at the moment.
Yeah.
Under the new model for gravitation that I've been developing for my paper, that's part two of it, I have modeled and animated a gravitational field called the containment field that contains the atoms of a planet or a star or a moon or a galaxy into the center.
Mm-hmm.
And the mechanism of it says that you have to have holes at the polar regions of galaxies, of stars, of planets and moons as they form. And when they cool, those will leave spiral patterns. And you'll see these patterns in the Earth, in the Moon, in other planets like Saturn, and in the moons of Saturn like Tethys 2. All these are pictures on my website at Show Images for today. And you'll see what I'm talking about, these spiral patterns that form. Now, because of this, and a news article that came out just the 24th of this month in Science News, they have discovered two what they call giant holes on the surface of the sun at the north and south pole of the sun, and they are venting up the magnetic waves through these holes. They're very tiny by comparison to the whole surface of the sun, but they are areas where the magnetic field breaks through from the chaos on the surface and the interior and shoots up magnetic fields. And I think this is, you know, the opening of the solar polar holes. Without seeing everything I've written in my paper, it probably sounds pretty strange. But
Okay. We love strange.
Okay. Well, this magnetic field we're talking about is 1,000 times stronger than the magnetic field of the Earth at the moment.
Wow.
It's a big punch coming through, but it's supporting what I'm saying, that all spherical gravitational objects have periodic openings at their north and south pole. They open and close, open and close. When they open, energy from the inside, whether it be from the Earth and its hot core or whether it be from the sun and its magnetic core, leaks out through these polar regions. And if you look at today's show images, down at about one through four lines down in the middle, you'll see a picture of hollow Earth cross-section. And, you know, since I've been developing this theory, I've now become an advocate of the hollow Earth theory, where it has voids in it. If you click on that, you'll see an opening at the poles and heat coming out of it. And, this is in keeping with the new theory. And right underneath that picture, you'll see a picture of the Vostok base at the South Pole, Russian base down there, which has been digging a hole at the geophysical, you know, the physical spin South Pole. They've been digging a hole down to a lake they found, Lake Vostok, 2.4 miles down. And even though it's at 37 degrees, it's a lake. It's not an ice chunk. It's a lake, and it's warming compared to the surrounding environment. Now, they stopped drilling this hole last year, and then they restarted suddenly. And we don't know whether it's because of what they imaged, the first probes going down deeper, or whether they got all the way to the lake before they stopped. But something made them hold up everything and then come back and start to do it again. You can see from the Google Earth photo, it looks like a hole there at the South Pole.
They started to re-drill? Why would they do that?
They want to go on down and get into the lake
and
do tests on it. But here's a lake that's warm when it should be frozen chunk, right? Now, what I'm trying to say is I think it's the energy from our South Pole starting to open up and letting core heat come up through there and heat that area. And the same thing at the North Pole. I mean, the Arctic ice is starting to melt now without explanation. And, of course, once it starts, the ice chunks start to break up and fracture, and that collects more heat because of the shadow zones and things and the absorption zones. And so it becomes a self-escalating process. So both poles are starting to get warm.
Interesting. Stan, stay right there. I told you your head wasn't going to explode this morning with Stan Dale, standale.com, and a fellow that knows a lot about the sunspots and all the things that are going on is Mitch Batros, and Mitch will be on the show next Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and the sun is certainly doing some curious things these days and not doing some curious things, too. Do you know? You don't? I'll tell you. Colostrum is one of the most powerful and interesting and unique and magical substances on the earth. It is immune milk produced by all mammals for only the first few hours after birth. It's supercharged with some 97 immune factors and 87 growth factors. It's the first food. Daniel Vitalis' company, working with Dr. Kleinsmith, who we've had on the show, they figured out a way how to get this first milk without interrupting the nourishment from the baby calves, from humanely raised and cows with good food and without antibiotics and such. And in some cases, they actually use some corn feeding, have we talked to Dr. K, just to get those immune factors in. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. It's the concept of if you let your kid play out in the dirt, that they're going to actually be stronger immunologically, I almost was able to say that, than if you just keep them inside in a baggie, which is not very much fun. Anti-aging benefits, growth factors. This colostrum is simply all the moisture is just taken out, and that's it. And you can purchase this. This is one of our favorite foods, and 2-3 tablespoons every day, and it's really amazing. And I would get the big can if you can afford it, the 2.2 pounds a kilo, and it's going to last a very long time. I cracked mine open just before Christmas, and it still has a half of it because the colostrum is so light. There's a lot in this can, and it's very, very powerful. And you can find your colostrum right on the front page. Click on the colostrum link or any link that goes to SirThrival on OneRadioNetwork.com. Click through our page, please, and we get a commission on this sale, and that keeps us going and keeps the phones and the internet and all the stuff on OneRadioNetwork.com.